This is the Mason Vera Payne Show, your go-to lifestyle program, covering everything from technology and gaming to movies, TV shows, and pop culture to the supernatural and beyond. Brought to you by WGNRadio.com with your host, the unabridged millennial, Mason Vera Payne.
Mason Payne here live from the NVP studios in Chicago, and thank you for tuning in. Google Trends expert Justin Burr is going to join me to break down the top five search trends on Google this week and what the number one trending video on YouTube is. Thanks for joining me, Justin.
No, thank you for having me, Mason.
Oh, all right. This week, Justin, what do we have for number five?
Number five, we've got Beyonce and Vogue. Beyonce is taking over as the editor-in-chief of the magazine for the September issue of Vogue. First time anybody has done this in the 126-year history. Normally, the editor-in-chief, which is Anna Wintour, she has like complete control of everything, down to everything that's written, all the photographs that are used, everything. But she's given Beyonce the keys to the kingdom. She's going to let Beyonce figure out the cover photo, which is going to be of Beyonce, then all the photos of her actually in the magazine, and all the captions as well. So she's relinquishing quite a bit of control. But even more impressive than Beyonce taking over for the September issue is that Beyonce was allowed to hire the photographer who's going to be shooting the cover photo, and that person is going to be the first black photographer to ever shoot the cover photo in 126 years, which is totally outrageous that that hasn't happened before, but it's great that it finally is. And the photographer is Tyler Mitchell. The dude's 23 years old. It's incredible. The guy's a man.
Wow. Is that all she's going to do? Is she going to, like, decide what articles go into the magazine for that month, too, or no?
You know, she's not. She is just going to have control over the cover, the photos inside of her, and all the captions, which I guess she's actually written herself and are in long form. But other than that, I think there's the rest of the team on Vogue that normally decides the rest of that stuff is still going to be doing that. So she doesn't have complete control, but quite a bit.
Wow, her and Anne Wintour must be like really good best friends to do that, right?
Totally agree. And that actually stoked a little bit of speculation that Anne Wintour was going to maybe retire or leave Vogue. But that's not the case. Condé Nast, which owns Vogue, CEO, came out and was like, no, like, she's here. We love her. She's integral to this magazine. She's not going anywhere.
I imagine not. I mean, she's been taking Vogue very seriously, and she took it to a whole new level. She's just incredible. I think she's awesome.
I agree. I'm excited to see what Beyonce does, though. It should be great.
So what's number four for this week?
We've got the CrossFit Games. 2018 CrossFit Games are kicking off this week to figure out who's the fittest on Earth. They are going on in Wisconsin right now. And it's actually interesting because they don't know what they're going to be competing in until the day of, all the competitors, because they don't want them to be able to train specifically for that activity, because the point of CrossFit is to be fit across a bunch of different disciplines. They don't know anything until it happens. So it's actually going on right now until Sunday, and it's being televised on CBS, portions of it at least. But if you're really into it, you can stream all of it at cbssports.com. But yeah, it's going on. I mean, the top search states that going for right now were Wisconsin, where the games are, and then Vermont and Colorado. So I guess those are the fittest states in terms of Google search trends.
How do they qualify? You can just sign up.
Yeah, this is the final round, and there's been a ton of different regional qualifications that contestants have to go through. It's kind of like the Olympics of CrossFit, so they have different trials in different states. But this is the top 40 men, top 40 women, top 40 teams, and then 80 teenagers. So there are 240 athletes competing in total.
That's really cool sounding. I need to watch that.
I agree. I'm actually a little bit intrigued. I know people kind of like to hate on CrossFit because the joke is like, what? You know, everybody's just telling everybody that they do CrossFit. But they're certainly athletes, and they're chiseled, and they've got cool abs, which is fun.
What's number three this week?
Number three is the Swedish family crown jewels. These freaking things were stolen in broad daylight. Sounds like a plot from like the Italian Job or something. The jewels are on display in this cathedral on Tuesday afternoon, and they're awesome. And people, there are two suspects that just went in, stole them, then escaped to a lake, got on a speedboat, and escaped through the lake. And they're still at large right now. But authorities are like, dude, these things are impossible to sell. So I don't know why you're stealing them in the first place. Like, they're inscribed, they're artifacts, everybody knows what they are. So if you sell them, you're just going to get caught. So I don't really know what they're going to be doing with them, but it's pretty interesting. The thing is, that was the trend, but there's also a bunch of other heists that were getting some attention this past week on Google. And the most upsetting heist was, did you hear about this? The McDonald's Monopoly heist. It was completely rigged. You know, growing up as a child, you're trying to win the money from the McDonald's Monopoly stuff, totally rigged by this dude named Uncle Jerry, who worked at the marketing firm that handled it, and he was just stealing the pieces and giving it to people.
I was more upset about that than the family jewels, I'll be honest with you, because you're right. I did that for years just because it was kind of fun. Everybody went to McDonald's, and where I worked at the time, you know, McDonald's was right in the building. So it's like, oh, you do the Monopoly thing, I'm going to win, you know, just for yucks. And it turns out that you never had a chance. What's that?
I know, Uncle Jerry. Guy's doing hard time, which is good, because I am mad about that. You know, you spend your hard-earned money on a jumbo-sized fry just to get a couple game pieces, and it's just for nothing.
Yes, and you didn't even eat it sometimes.
I know. It's a sad time, but at least we know that Jerry's paying for his badness.
Yeah, he has to pay, I think, restitution, too, in the millions. I hope all the people he gave those little pieces to give him some money, right?
Yeah, exactly.
What was number two this week?
What is Alex Trebek? Yeah, that's right. He was trending. The Jeopardy host, I guess, kind of hinted that he might be retiring in 2020 when his contract comes to an end. Dude, the dude's been doing it for 34 years, which is unbelievable. He's totally the face of that game, and he's just so iconic, which is weird because it's just like a dude up there reading questions to answers or answers to questions, however the game is structured. Yeah, he might be hanging it up. I guess there's some two potential candidates were getting some attention on Google this past week as suggestions to the to succeed him. That'd be Alex Faust, which is the play-by-play announcer for the NHL team, the LA Kings. And then Laura Coates, which is the on-air personality for CNN. So, interesting. It's going to be a tough act to follow, though. I mean, Trebek is seriously the man.
Yeah, and that's true, because when you think of Price is Right, Family Feud, the host is always engaging with the audience. They're engaging with the contestant. Versus, you know, Alex, he was just professional. He stated the answer out, and he was just really good at that, while being entertaining in his own way. It's going to be pretty big shoes to fill in, you know?
I know. Who do you think is more iconic, though, Alex Trebek or Bob Barker? Because, you know, when Bob left, it was a sad time, but Drew Carey's doing a great job.
Yeah, that's true. And that's what I mean about engaging with the audience. Bob Barker, he would play with the audience at home. He would play with the audience in the studio. Alex Trebek doesn't really have to do that, but he still had a presence. And I don't think a lot of people have that presence. At least I can't think of anybody.
Yeah, no, I agree. And there's such a funny video of Alex Trebek reading out rap lyrics because one of the categories was rap. And he's like reading out Kendrick Lamar. Man, it's great. If anybody hasn't seen that, you got to check it out.
What's number one this week?
Number one, LeBron James. The guy is honestly incredible. No matter who you're cheering for in terms of your basketball allegiances, you have to respect this man. He opened up the I Promise School this past week in Akron, Ohio, where he grew up. And it's going to be just an incredible public education facility for the kids that attend there. The kids are getting free bikes, free helmets, free college tuition, free food, help for their families that may not be able to provide food at home, free uniforms, free GED education if the parents of the kids maybe didn't finish their GED. I mean, the list goes on and on. It's completely incredible. And the reason that LeBron James did this is because growing up as a child, it was really difficult for him. It was just him and his mom. Oftentimes, they didn't even have a permanent place to live. He was growing up in some pretty tough neighborhoods, and he wanted to make sure that the kids at this school never had to face some of the obstacles that he did. And, you know, it's phenomenal, the legacy that he's leaving behind right now, and he's having such an incredible impact on these children. And I am just fired up to be reading about this. And, you know, I don't know, LeBron is just, he's the greatest.
You know, that is something a lot of people don't know, is that LeBron, when he was growing up, he was homeless. I think it's absolutely incredible he's doing this for his hometown. I mean, what a way to pass it on, right? Give love to the city you grew up in.
I know. And he, you know, everybody just kind of assumes that because of the success that he's had now, that maybe he didn't have any hardships growing up, but no, he had a really difficult childhood. Apparently he missed 83 days of school when he was in fourth grade because him and his mom were just kind of bouncing around from couch to spare room, and, you know, they were having a lot of difficulties, but I guess fifth grade was kind of the turning point for him. He met a lot of mentors, a lot of people that were helping him, and he didn't miss any days of school. And so, I don't know, it's awesome to see him come from those humbling beginnings. He did say that this has been the greatest accomplishment of his career is opening up this school, which is something to say considering he's potentially the greatest basketball player to ever live. So it's awesome.
So for this week, what's the number one YouTube video?
Number one YouTube video, it's a long one, so you got to cut out like 15 minutes of your day, but it's these pastry chefs. It's called Pastry Chef Attempts to Make Gourmet Oreos, and it's cool. I'm certainly an Oreo fan, milk's favorite cookie. I really like to dip it in the milk for a long time, get it nice and saturated to the point where it's almost like breaking apart, and then you eat it, because that is awesome. But it's impressive what they're able to do in this video. Essentially, they're just making homemade Oreos, even with the intricate print on them as well, and the homemade cream and everything. And then they like go around the offices and give them to people, and they're like, wow, these are actually better than normal Oreos. You know, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. Why are you making these? Just eat Oreos. Why go through that issue? But I am impressed with the way that they're able to make the cookie so much similarly to the Oreo itself.
I absolutely agree with you. I mean, why improve perfection, right? This is a perfect cookie. You don't need to do anything to it. And I already know, like, because I watched most of it, because 15 minutes was a long time. The cost for that homemade cookies was more than the Oreo cookies. You could have bought every single brand of Oreo cookies out there. Yeah, and still had that. I don't understand why they would even bother with it.
Man, so true. I totally agree. The only thing that I was particularly stoked on was that people were explaining in the video that were trying it that the cookie itself was a little bit less crumbly and kind of a little bit softer and a little bit denser, which is bomb. That's why I saturate that cookie so much, because I want it to be like a nice, like soft kind of a situation, because the Oreo by itself is pretty crunchy. So kudos to them. Stoked on it. The video's got like 3 million views already since being uploaded on Tuesday. And for a video of people making Oreos, that's pretty impressive that many people watched.
Well, thanks, Justin, for joining me. I really appreciate you being here, man.
Yeah, no problem. Always a pleasure.
This has been the Mason Vera Payne Show. Thanks for listening. Can't wait to hear more? Subscribe, rate, and comment at masonverapayne.com. That's MASONVERAPAINE.com. Also, follow Mason on Facebook and Twitter at Mason Vera Payne. That's all one word. And don't forget to share the show with your friends.